Stratford, 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Why do you talk like this?
Because I try to time it so that the music ends at exactly 11 o'clock. I don't want to run over into socialist alternative radio time, and I don't want them to rush to fill up the dead air.
But you make people fall asleep when you talk like that.
Anyhow, counting down 2 seconds, and this is it.
Against the U.S. That's the 7 o'clock edition of the news. Good night.
Good morning, and welcome to WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And, that's the end of Ear Buddies. Thank you, Ear Buddies, for plugging our show earlier. We still appreciate that. Can't say enough about that. And we were also talking off air. I guess you mentioned it on air, that we're both going to be here New Year's Eve. Yay. So that's going to be fun. And we're here every other Sunday, Social Alternative Radio, talking music by working class. Democratic Socialist Perspective every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And for our regular listeners, welcome back. Today's myself, Jeff.
Diego.
And Diego's back in the DJ house.
I got Sundays off.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks to the lack of lack of business in the mom and pop shop industry, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, they're saying, oh, people are spending a lot of money on Christmas, you know. I'm not.
No.
My family's not. So I'm a little dubious about those things. I know that people go the extra mile for Christmas, holiday stuff, whatever holiday you celebrate. I know that people push the limits, get the credit cards out and all that. But we reached the limit on that, so it's not going to happen this year. Sorry. Sorry, kids. Sorry, Justin. Sorry, Chloe. And so I just wonder about that. You know, I'm not going out to eat at all. I mean, you know, I mean, I used to try to do that. I was stupid to ever try to do that. I never made enough money to really go out to eat much, but I would still waste money on that. You know, I don't do that anymore. I draw a line. I'll starve until I can get home and cook something. You know, I know a lot of people are like that. No big deal, but
I work in a restaurant and I've starve myself because there's no time.
Do they ever give you food in those places?
I could. They call it employee meal. It's 100%. So, you know, it could be other places they charge you half or whatever. But you know,
so you were working
the same food every day. I'm like, you get sick and tired.
But you were working with
two jobs,
and now you're down to one, right?
Down to one,
and you got Sundays off now.
Yeah, because they're closing on Sundays.
But you must have lost a lot of money, though, right?
No, I still get the hours. You just don't get.
But from, well, oh, okay, I see.
Yeah,
just, I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like if I requested a, because I've been doing a lot of doubles.
Yeah.
To make up 38 to 40 hours.
Yeah, I've been working a little overtime, not enough, but they won't give me enough.
I mean, it could be worse. I'll tell you that. I've had worse jobs than this one.
Yeah, that's that. what we always say though. It can be worse. It can be a lot better too.
It can be a lot better. Exactly.
It can be a lot better. And we're gonna get into that when we talk about the election that happened down in Alabama, because the liberals are saying, hey, you know, they're just riding high. This is the wave of the future, blah, blah, blah. But then when you look into that candidate, not just the Republican idiot that lost, which is, who could shed a tear about that, right? The guy, the creepy, racist, pedophile, idiot guy lost, right? Two things, problems with that, though. One is, how the heck does someone like that get on the ballot? You know what I mean? Like, lesser evilism has led everything to shift to the right so badly that this is possible, right? That this is an actual thing now, that someone like that could actually run. But also, you look at the guy named Jones, the Democratic Party candidate, and look at the campaign he ran, and there's huge problems with it. Huge, huge problems with it. And we'll get into that in a few. So, by the way, I'm not saying huge problems from a socialist perspective. I'm saying huge problems from just a anything perspective. This guy.
In general.
Yeah, yeah. But I will add the socialism stuff too. So anyway, welcome to the show. Again, if you're not a regular listener, what we do here on Socialist Alternative Radio is we do provide alternative information about current events, about socialism, the socialist movement, and there is one, believe it or not, and other things that are happening. Sort of a progressive radio show that you might have heard in other places in some respects, although we are different in the sense that we are openly unabashed partisan socialists, 110% pro-democratic socialism, 110% pro-union, a lot of things that some people don't like, especially people at the top of the food chain, don't like here in U.S. society. We like a lot, and we talk about and promote. But also, we go a step further. We want you to get involved. We give you this information not so you can just get angry and then go back and watch the game later, but we want you to get angry. We want you to go ahead and watch the game. It's a Sunday, whatever. But, you know, then, you know, maybe on Monday, get in touch with Socialist Alternative. Get in touch with you know, get involved more in your union. Get involved in left-wing politics. Get involved with socialist politics. And we can give you
a
start. And if
they
take a
knee, applaud.
They're not taking knees anymore,
right
though, right?
Go, oh, he took a knee. I said, I'm boycotting the Patriots.
They're not taking the knees anymore, though, are they?
No.
I didn't notice that. I have to admit, see, I don't even like football, but like, you know how you go through a kid, when you're a kid, you go through these things where you want to be something? So we went through, where I'm from, all the kids in my neighborhood.
Hockey?
All of them. All the sports. We wanted to do all the sports, like, you know, and baseball probably lasted the longest, but now baseball bores the crap out of me. But back then, we all played baseball the most serious, then basketball. Football, you know how long football lasted for me? About 2 weeks. Because I thought I was really into it.
What about soccer?
I was good at running and passing. Soccer, we didn't know. No, not soccer. We didn't know much about it then. No. This is the 70s, you know.
Oh, okay.
60s and late 60s, early 70s.
I love soccer.
No, it's great. It's a good sport. It's a good sport. But
I
it's
love
just
to
like,
watch it, too. Like, I've been getting into it. I wasn't so much into soccer until, like, maybe the last World Cup. And
well,
but even that has problems. Because then, you know, what they did at the World Cup, they ousted people in Brazil. Yeah. And there was a lot of rioting. And, you know, a lot of things you don't see behind the scenes.
They had soccer, of course, when I was a kid. People played it. You know, schools played it and all that. It wasn't much women's soccer, but there was soccer. And but, you know, I don't know. We weren't that into that. But the thing I was going to say, though, about football is it is such... And of course, with all the head trauma, injuries, the concussions and so on, that's coming out is pretty obvious. But... what a violent game. I mean, I wanted to play football until a friend of mine who had started to play, a guy named Phil Lasco, I don't know if he's still alive. Phil, good friend of mine, he learned through Pop Warner how to cross body block. That's where you throw your whole body, I don't know if it's still legal or not, into an opponent. And you're supposed to do this way, like parallel to the ground,
gladiator style.
No, parallel to the ground, cross body. So
God!
And I think you're supposed to use your back. I'm not sure about that. I didn't learn it.
So all your strength goes into it.
Ah, well, here's the trick, right? It's supposed to be above the knees. If you do it below the knees, it's illegal. But of course, we're playing pickup games. Nothing's illegal. So Phil, who's I don't know if it was a mistake or what, he cross body blocked me below my knees, and my knees locked. And I thought my legs were going to break, basically. They didn't. I was lucky. No broken bones, but it was scary as heck. And I basically was like, okay, I don't think I want to be a pro football player. Also, we had these pickup games where I would witness the bloodiest things. Like this kid I knew, Bill Sewell, he got tackled on a rock. Like a rock went into his knee. So everyone's all tough macho back then. So he's crying his head off. We're in like junior high. And so we bring him into his mom's kitchen, and everyone thinks that like toxic masculinity, as they would say now, or macho, stuff, using the old phraseology, is like all male generated. It's not at all. Everyone knows most kids' mothers where I grew up wanted you to be tough. Like the first time I got beat up from a friend of mine, it was like a play fight, but I got the worst of it. She watched the whole thing and then said, get back in there. Why don't you go back in there and hurt him? What are you doing? Blah, blah. This is my mother. And I'm like 7 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old.
So this was my grandfather who was always cheering for me.
Cheering is a nice way to put it.
this is a time, this is in Houston where, they weren't so open-minded with us. They were racist, So I come across this guy calling me the N-word because he didn't know what I was.
Oh my God.
This kid, And well, I kind of understood what it was, even though I didn't, but I know it was prerogative. And then I smacked him. I threw him against the car, his dad's car. And my mother came out and woke us up. But my grandfather's like, No, let him be. Let him be. He needs to be a man.
Oh, here we go.
Well, my grandfather went to the Spanish Civil War. He volunteered.
Oh, you never said that.
I never told you that?
You might have, but I forgot.
So he's like, no, he needs to get tough, I've been through hell and back, and that's how.
Wow, yeah. Well,
he went through Mexico. He went through another brigade.
Yeah, yeah.
Mexico, Cuba, and then he took a boat from Cuba.
Did he ever write about it, or?
No, he just talked about certain things, but then he didn't really get into it. I'll show you a picture when he came back.
I'd love to see it. We need to have a whole show on
a little hat with a little red star.
Yeah, I know those hats. Yeah, we should have had we should have a whole show on the Spanish Revolution, or what was sometimes known as the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s.
Well, that's why he's a socialist. He passed away a decade ago.
Oh, yeah, okay. But by the way, that story I never finished of the toxic masculinity, whatever you want to call it. I don't really like that phrase, but anyway. So we bring this kid into his house, Bill, the guy that got tackled on the rock. I was telling that story before. And his mother's like, what are you crying for? It's just a blah, blah. And every mother that I knew said stuff like that. If you got hurt, it was nothing, right? What are you crying about? That's nothing. We'll just put some stuff on it, put a band-aid on it. That's nothing. So he goes, he's crying, and he goes, but Ma, I don't want to do the crying voice, but Ma, it's all the way back to the bone. He takes the skin flap, pulls it back, and his bone is coming. You can see his bone. And we all these tough kids, and me, not so tough, we all look at that, and we just turn pale. We're like, no one threw up, but I felt like it, man. I was queasy for the rest of the day. I could tell other stories.
It's like a bullet wound, man, right? It's like you gotta take that
out. It was like a bullet wound. It was like shrapnel. And then it's like, goal line was off in somebody's driveway. So you'd run there, you'd tackle on their front yard, and then the goal line would be someone's driveway or someone's others, like a hedge or something. It was really stupid. So all these kids are getting tackled on the driveways without helmets. We're not playing with any equipment usually. Sometimes we did, but usually none.
Oh, so it's not even a field.
Oh, it's just crazy. Oh, it's right idiot on the children.
Old block.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And who can afford? That's the thing about football. It's expensive, man. Who can afford all that equipment and everything? It's just terribly expensive. Terribly expensive. But you know what? The point of that story was, for some reason, last couple years, this year included, I actually do watch the Patriots play a lot. Not always, but I don't know. I'm out of the hype or something. And Brady's a right winger. I don't even like the guy. But I kind of admire a 40-year-old or whatever he is up there, Oh, it's so funny. They count the number of times he gets tackled out. Oh, no. Tom Brady was tackled 8 times yesterday. That's a problem. What? Did you count him with the tackles when he was 25? I don't think so.
I'm not a big football guy.
Oh, I'm not. I don't know why I'm watching it. It's
soccer,
a waste of time.
Forget
man.
It. I'll sit there and watch it all. You know, yesterday I was watching the Drugas, but I can't even pronounce it. It's
what the, channel the are you watching the soccer on?
Spanish. It's the German leagues. Gungas League. Gungas.
I don't know, man.
But it was like Germany versus Sweden or something like that. The Netherlands, you know?
Who won?
Sweden.
Oh, that's good.
I kind of
like that. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know what I think
but
about
soccer. But
everybody
on the team were either like African, Latin American.
Yeah, that's how it is, yeah. Because when we go to my...
And a few whites, but...
It was when we go to my wife's parents' house for holidays and stuff, they're Portuguese. They've always got soccer
Benfica
on.
Benfica, yeah. Porto.
Yeah.
They're like Boston Red Sox versus
he likes
the Yankees.
They like Porto. Yeah. We were at Porto in 2005. And
you went to Porto or
we went all over
Lisbon.
The place. We went to Porto, Lisbon, Coimbra, and a couple other places. And
you didn't see Fatima.
No, we didn't see anyone play. But anyway, the point of the story is that Portugal's this place that kind of grows on you. Like you get there, and it's like kind of compared to some of the flashier capitals of Europe, like Paris or whatever. It's not, and I like Paris a lot, but I mean, it's just not as exciting. But then if you hang around, which we were able to do a little bit, it kind of grows on you. Like, it's a little more...
A lot of tapas. Like, little cafes.
No. Yeah. Well, what they had is, especially in Porto, outside of Porto as well, kind of like life for workers was a little better then. It's gotten worse. Portugal's gone through a lot of neoliberal capitalist garbage. But I just felt more comfortable there. You know, I felt pretty comfortable there after a while.
I visited Azores once with a friend.
Yeah, we talked about that. You liked it, right?
I loved it. Yeah. I'm like, these little inexpensive dishes, you know, like plate of the day. You ate once a day. You felt like you were fulfilled. Because, you know, that's when I found out that we're getting fed garbage in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Demineralized stuff. Here you eat one day, you feel, I'm content. Because you got all your nutrients. You know, you got all your minerals, everything that you need. It's natural. It's not this... high corn syrup ingredients in the stuff that you need to get away from, which is, by the way, illegal in all countries but this one.
Well, you know, yesterday I went grocery shopping. I'm doing that a lot now.
Read the label. Get away from.
Well, I do, but you know, if you want some things, you want the label. Like they had this like imitation. Like, I'm already looking for cheap seafood because it's hard to find.
Yeah.
So they have this like imitation crab. Yeah, exactly. There's imitation crab meat stuff.
Crab is crab.
No. It's made of pollock, which isn't that bad. That's a fish. Alaskan pollock's a real fish. Okay. Yeah. But all the other stuff they put in it, every single one had dextrose something or other, disodium something or other in it. And I wanted to find one without preservatives, and I couldn't, so I didn't buy it. I was like, I can't put this into my children's, you know, not that they would eat anything. They don't eat anything, but, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I can't do this to people. I can't buy all these weird ingredients, you know. I try to stay away from them as much as possible. It's really, really hard, though. Really hard. Like you said,
well, when I went to the Azores, it was just straightforward. It is what it is. It's shrimp. It's this. It's vegetables.
But you know what they do with seafood? I got to say, even though I like it, I got to say, seafood gets adulterated, as they say, or, you know, changed in a bad way. In a lot of ways that aren't, I don't think they're listed. Like, they're allowed to, like, put seafood in some sort of, like, soap or something, like some sort of wash. So when you wash the stuff, you actually see the bubbles come out and stuff. Ever do that with, like, shrimp or whatever? It's pretty gross. And I've read about it. I just don't have all the names of the stuff that they're allowed to put stuff in when they freeze it and stuff.
No, because I guess my mother, what she does, she actually goes to a Portuguese... Because I live in East Cambridge.
Yeah.
Heavily. It's like little Portugal.
Right.
And she just buys her seafood straight from that Portuguese place.
Yeah.
So it's coming straight from Gloucester.
If you buy raw shrimp, you might get away from that.
Yes.
But I'm talking about buying cooked shrimp for like shrimp cocktail or whatever, and you wash the stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's also other fish, too. It's like they're allowed to do weird stuff to it that's not part of the necessarily added ingredients that you get listed. It's just like a way of... cleaning or storing fish. That's just for some reason they get out of saying what it is. The other thing is that organic, what does that really mean? I know people say that a lot, But organic doesn't mean you don't use any pesticides. It means you can use certain approved ones and stuff like that. Anyway, food is just, that's another thing. Big, a lot of people in the United States, not a lot of people, but a certain number of people in the United States I find get radicalized towards left-wing politics or what they think is left-wing politics through food issues, you know? Like they're like, they get mad about that they have to eat poison or they become vegetarians and wonder why there's huge industries out there to, you know, slaughter cattle in the worst possible way and all this other stuff. Anyway, today's show, which we're segueing into here slowly, got a lot of stuff. You brought a book in, right? You want to talk about it a little bit later?
Yeah. It's
what's it called?
A book by Tariq Ali.
Oh, we talked about that last
time.
Very
recent.
2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago.
It's called The Dilemmas of Lenin, Terrorism, War, and this is subtitle, Terrorism, War, Empire, Love, and Revolution.
You got that from the library, public library?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I brought in a couple books maybe we could talk about briefly. One I've talked about before the show, The Democrats, A Critical History by Lance Selfa. It came out in 2012 before Trump, obviously, but very worth reading, I think. Although, it's hard. It's a hard book. I find it hard to read straight through. So I've been picking through it. I got through all of it one way or the other, but I jumped from chapter around a lot. The other one is called, brand new, 2016, The Last Great Strike. Little Steel, The CIO and the Struggle for Labor Rights in New Deal America by Ahmed White. And not sure I agree with his thesis here, which we'll get into, but it's very interesting stuff that I didn't know that much about. The 1937 Little Steel Strike, also known as the Memorial Day Strike, in the, you know, during the Roosevelt administration, a lot of people don't know Roosevelt called out the National Guard more than any other president called out the troops more on strikers than any other president. Another liberal icon that doesn't stand the test of real historical scrutiny. This guy gets into that a little bit, this author, and also just the facts, which we'll get into a little bit. Other stuff we want to talk about. We want to talk about some elections that just happened and talk about Trump's tax thing and some international stuff as well. So we have a lot of material.
Can we get into that article that criticizes us?
Oh, yeah. Where did I put that? Let's see. The National Review, which hopefully you don't know what that is, but if you do, it is a extreme right-wing paper or journal, whatever it is now, a magazine in the United States. And used to be run by William Buckley, who was a well-known conservative elitist, kind of actually a very ignorant, stupid man, but because he spoke with a patrician accent, like an East Coast elite accent, he got a lot of airtime on the TV and radio back in the 1960s and 70s. But actually kind of really stupid, and people think he's an intellectual, but if you read his material, it's pathetically ignorant of everything, just about. And so now, I don't know who runs National Review now, but this is a op-ed piece, I think, or maybe it's a regular article, I'm not sure, by someone named Philip H. DeVoe, which a friend of mine looked up, and sure enough, it's like sort of a guy that went to prep school and one of the 1%. It's called Socialism by Any Other Name, and it spends most of the article attacking socialist alternatives, so we thought we would read that. By the way, if you're just tuning in, this is Socialist Alternative Radio.
We like criticism too, so.
Well, it's such a joke.
But it's a
joke of criticism.
Yeah.
It's like not real criticism, but it's funny. Anyway, so yeah, you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, and anything you hear on the show, if you want more information, get in touch with us. Go to socialistalternative.org. On the web, go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And as we said earlier in the show, the purpose of our show is to organize, not just to inform. And we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. And another way to talk about this station, just to give you an overview here if you're just tuning in for the first time, we're emanating from 91.5 FM, broadcasting from 91.5 FM. That's WMFO in Medford / Somerville, Massachusetts, part of Greater Boston. And the station identifies itself as Tufts Freeform Radio. We're also commercial free radio still. And we're community based radio, meaning it's not just, even though it emanates, even though the show comes from Tufts University, there are community shows like our Socialist Alternative Radio on the air. We've been on the air over a decade here. And you can also listen in by going to WMFO.org, listen by computer. excuse me, you're going to hear me cough a little bit. I got this cold that seems to go away and comes back, and I've compared notes with coworker stuff, and it's the same kind of thing. I think I got it from somebody at work also. Anyway, so let's get into the elections a little bit, if you don't mind, people. We are now, about a month past, over a month past the November 7th election battle we talked about in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Why were we talking about that? Because a member of Socialist Alternative, an open socialist named Ginger Jensen, was running for city council, and she ran in a Ward 3, I believe it was, a mixed ward, a lot of working class people, but also a lot of developers, gentrification, people had been so-called developing the neighborhood, some businesses, and University of Minnesota, or part of it, was also in there, a lot of students. And so I just got an email a couple weeks ago, or a week ago, December 5th, I think a lot of people got this email, like literally thousands of people who had either donated or volunteered time or expressed interest in the campaign. So I just want to read a little bit of the email. It's from Ginger Jensen. Together we've changed the conversation on how to build a city in the interest of ordinary people and not millionaire real estate developers. This would not have been possible without your support, your donations, your volunteer time. That's in bold. I was proud to have Socialist Alternative next to my name on the ballot. We want to build a political alternative rooted in social justice movements based unapologetically on the needs of working people and free from corporate cash. Our result on election night showed this is not only possible with big business and wealthy developers pouring money into elections, it's urgent. While Minneapolis is at a crossroads, the Trump administration proposes massive tax breaks to corporations and the super rich. One critic highlights the Trump billionaire-backed administration's current tax bill shows that it allows, quote, a billionaire to write off their personal jet, but a teacher has to pay out of pocket for their school supplies. Now, our independent campaign went up against powerful PACs, political action committees, the entire city establishment, big developers, the corporate media, and much more. I don't know if you were here for the show where we talked about how the biggest newspaper / web platform for the bourgeois corporate media is called, I believe, the Star Tribune or something like that in Minneapolis. And they basically put out election, before the election, they're who they want people to vote for. They said anybody but Ginger Jensen. So, and then there was the PACs were Republican PACs, but they were basically supporting the Democratic Party, the main Democratic Party candidate running that Ginger was running against. And that money went to basically just attacking Ginger from the big Republican PACs and somewhat even to promoting the Democrat. Last summer, this continues from suggestion. Last summer, we won a historic victory, making ours the first Midwestern city to pass a $50 minimum wage. Now, that's important because of what is just stated. First Midwest city, the other two are on the coasts or three or four or whatever has passed. But also, Ginger Jensen herself was director of that campaign. The Socialist Alternative played a big role in initiating and organizing that campaign, which was called 15 Now. In Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and we urge you to look that up. Excuse me. We then took on the Let the Market Decide approach, which has dominated housing policy at City Hall, putting forward clear demands like taxing big developers to build affordable housing and passing rent control. And these became the central discussions in Minneapolis politics. So in other words, the campaign was based on housing issues to a great extent, but it had a lot of other issues as well. And there's a few highlights from this. Now, you may be wondering, I don't know if I mentioned this explicitly, but yeah, we lost the election, but it was very, very close. And one of the reasons we lost is it had this this voting system of I'm losing my vocabulary here on what that's called, but it's the one where it's not proportional. It's the one where you do count up you give ballots to first three preference voting. Mm-hmm. So the first round of first preference votes, Ginger actually won the election. But because it had preference voting, the other candidates in that ward that attacked Ginger, actually, including a right-wing Green Party candidate, those preference votes tended to go over to the leading Democrat. And that's so in the second round or third round or whatever, we lost the election. And that that kind of you know, preference voting is often put forward by liberals as some sort of solution to, you know, corrupt bourgeois, you know, capitalist politics, and it's not. They love it. It's just a lot of so-called election reform is not thought out well by the liberals. For example, when they try to get campaign finance laws, limit financing, they throw unions in there. You don't want unions to be limited in what they can contribute. You want unions to be able to contribute a lot, because they're just trying to contribute something compared to the massive amount of money they can never match that the corporations put in, you know? And with this preference voting, it's the same thing. If you had preference voting with proportional representation, maybe it would be tolerable. But I think in this case, it showed it's really bad, actually. So anyways, some of the campaign highlights: mobilized 200-plus new volunteers to the Ginger Jensen campaign in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that ended recently in a defeat, but a close election. Now, what they don't show here is the overall vote count, maybe because it was changing still, but my understanding was it was 34% or 38%, which is very high for a socialist vote, you know? Like, a lot of socialist groups that bothered to run candidates in the past, say, 20 or 30 years, with the exception of Socialist Alternative, but even sometimes we fall in this category. You know, you see a 3%, 5% vote, and you're like, oh, that's something to build on. But we actually run to win, and we have won twice. Chavez Sawat was elected this to Seattle City Council once in 2013 and reelected again in 2016 with a higher margin even the second time around. Ginger's case, you know, 34%, whatever it was, 38%, that is nothing to sneeze at. That is really, really good. There was a 200, we drove a 260% increase in voter turnout in predominantly student renter precincts with our campaign winning over 60% of the vote. Oh, another thing that happened that was really weird was we won that first round in every single precinct. And even with the counting in the preference votes, we won in Bottineau, Sheridan, Beltrami, St. Anthony East, West, Marcy Homes, and Dinkytown. They have a place called Dinkytown there. These are precincts. And in six of these precincts, we won by 15% or more.
They named a precinct Dinkytown?
No, they named a part of the city Dinkytown. Wow. I always thought that was weird. It's right near the University of Minneapolis. And it's, so it's well-known because students hang out there. But it's also known because Bob Dylan in his early years apparently played music there. Yeah, that's all I know about it. Anyway, so this vote shows that together we have a mandate to organize and struggle for rent control, much more. But to win, we need all of you to get involved. So it basically turns into this letter of appeal to show up for a meeting we organized out there about rent control, with Chavez Sawat was there as well. Also, I want to mention that just before the election vote, Ryan Timlin, a member of Socialist Alternative, who is a longtime bus driver, although Ryan's a pretty young guy, so I guess he started driving when he was quite young, he's now president of the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union, 1005, representing bus drivers, mechanics, and light rail workers, all those who keep the transit system running in Minneapolis. So that's a very powerful position. And he won that because he's been a shop steward, a union representative, and basically the conservative leadership, or relatively conservative leadership, didn't want to continue. Basically, they didn't want to go through an election. Another one of our members did run an election for E-Board, lost narrowly. And the latest information I have, and I'll have more about this in a next show, is that the union, you know, even before Ryan got elected, once he was clear he was going to become the president because there was no opposition, the whole drive of the union was to take a strike vote, saying that if they don't get a good contract, because the city was going after them second time in a row with deep concessions on medical payments and low wages and stuff like that, if we don't reverse these concessions and get a good contract, we might strike during the Super Bowl. Because they're on the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, and getting back to football. And so they took that vote, and it was overwhelmingly for striking by the workers. So it was a very good vote. And they just saw Ryan coming in. I think they know about Socialist Alternative based on 15 Now and stuff. And so the most recent information I have is that we won the contract already, or that something happened close to that, that the city stepped back on concessions or something like that. I'll have the exact information next time. So that's already a victory based on that. So we connected that whole union struggle, of course, and any union struggles that were going on to be opposite to the campaign for Ginger Jensen. So just a couple last things. Quote, we should connect movements against stop and fix policing with the struggle for equity. Excuse me, transit, wages, education, and a community oversight board on the police are all part of this. We must build a coalition of riders and drivers to fight against fare increases, cuts to service, and attacks on workers' wages and benefits. This is all crucial to expanding, stopping cuts to service and attacks on workers' and wages and benefits. This is all crucial to expanding into a world-class transit system in Minneapolis, making Minneapolis a leader in environmental justice as well. Three billionaires in the U.S. now own more wealth than the bottom half of the U.S. population. You know, why can't a billionaire just hand me like $10,000? Because for them, that would be like tossing a penny at me. You know what I mean? I could do so much with that.
It's not so much that they're going to miss it. It's just
they
the
won't
fact,
even miss it.
It's just, they won't, but it's the fact that they're giving up. It's like you said, no, they can't give up that power. It's like they can't. It's more about
it's never
power.
Enough. It's never
yeah,
enough.
It's all about power. It's not about, you know.
Yeah. Let's see.
Not about being content. Okay, I got a billion. I should just
yeah, they
go
never
off
know
my
when
own
to stop.
Island
yeah,
and relax.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I just want to exploit everybody and right, anybody right. and everything.
Right. Yep, you're right, you're right, you're right. And they do it in the name of the system, too. You know? Yeah, what a wonderful system.
Because if he was to give you $10,000, that means he starts to give everybody. He needs
well,
to give everybody.
What's bad is that they turn, you're right, but what also happens is they turn the exploitative nature of the system. They're using people, using their labor, using up nature. They turn that, they think they're doing someone a favor by doing that. I'm a job creator. I'm helping people with this. No, there's about 5 million other ways we can help people other than making you rich. Okay? You think we can't run stuff ourselves? We run it ourselves.
These workers get bread on the table because of
me. Ah, yeah, I love that one. I love that one.
I love that one.
Yeah. We had a discussion. We had a social alternative meeting last week where we discussed the tax thing, which we'll get into in a second. And you have to understand, people, I think a lot of you do, there's no law that says a corporation has to invest in anything. There's no law saying they have to take tax money they'll save and give you a raise. There's no law that says they have to even invest that money. And there's plenty of corporations that shut down even when they're making a profit because they see more profit elsewhere. That's the whole free market thing, right? That's what people, you know. There's no law to say a corporation must take extra money and do anything that will help people with it. They take the money and put it in their salaries. They take the money and buy up other corporations. They take the money to buy politicians. So the politicians will then pass tax laws.
They're
like
not
this.
Doing the Keynesian trickle-down economics.
It's not even that. It's not even that.
You know.
That didn't work either. But because the corporations were in power under Keynesianism. It's not anti-capitalist. I'm going to put some music on in a minute. But anyway, so the end of this thing goes into...
It's trickle up, not down.
It's exploit. It's you know, workers create all wealth. You know, you can put a lot of Marxism on bumper stickers. I've seen them. Workers create all wealth. Labor creates all wealth. That's absolutely true.
Workers unite.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. There's a real common sense way to think about one of the main points of Marxism, that workers create all wealth. So you get in the media. So someone says Bill Gates created the personal computer and the internet. Now, neither one's true, really. But he did help market the personal computer. But let's think about that for a second. Did Bill Gates go around and talk to a million people? Or did he somehow have some help with that? You know?
Yeah.
Did Bill Gates, then when they were building personal computers, did he work on the factory floor assembling every computer? So if you're gonna reduce socialized production and social production down to one individual, why? You're lying, basically. The corporate media is lying to you all the time. You know?
If you dissect that computer, I guarantee you, this one little screen piece is made in India.
Thousands of people made that.
And this battery thing is made in China. And this other is made in Taiwan. You know?
Yep.
All these components in itself just tells you that the vast of, you know, people involved.
Exactly.
In this one
right.
item.
And especially if you get into
article,
the...
which is a computer.
Especially if you stretch it out. The mining of the materials that went into the components...
From Africa?
You went to the assembly of the components, right? Then you get into the distribution. Who delivered the components? Who packaged them? Who delivered them? Yeah. And then you can even get into the marketing stuff. Does Bill Gates think up his little slogans for marketing? No, not really.
This is one documentary that was very interesting. You know, it was liberal, but it talked about, it got into where your coffee comes from, for instance. And they got into, like, the Starbucks. And they got into, well, this, the farmer in Africa, in Ethiopia, who's growing it to table. You know what I mean? The all the processes in between.
A lot of processes. It's socialized production.
Yeah.
To make that claim.
And then, and I'm watching this, okay, this is a liberal thing, but I'm like, they just literally gave a Marxist analogy.
Yeah, exactly.
Without even knowing in what they just did.
And not even drawing the right conclusions from it.
And not drawing,
therefore, if all those people do that, they deserve to be credit. They deserve credit for that product, and they deserve full value, because the value that we add to that process is never the value we get back in wages. And that's where profit comes from.
And then they ruin it at the end with saying, but it's fair trade, this whole fair trade brand.
Yeah, nothing fair about fair trade.
Fair trade,
I hate
really?
That, yeah.
So is that Ethiopian farmer, did he get his fair share?
Nope.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know, exactly. Well, also, it's like the counter argument, for example, from like this idiot that wrote this National Review article we'll get into, a counter argument would be a very superficial one, but let's entertain it for a second. It would be, hey, we're not saying Bill Gates built every last computer. Well, why not? I mean, that's because you are kind of saying that when you say Bill Gates is responsible for this or that. You go, no. We're saying, I mean, playing the conservative here, we're saying he put up the capital for it. He put up the money for it. He. If it wasn't for his money, right, these things wouldn't happen. Well, let's look at that a couple ways. Let's take it at face value. Where'd that money come from? Where does capital come from? Capital is the unpaid labor of the working class, meaning all that wages that doesn't equal the full value of what we contribute with our labor, some of that goes back into capital, a lot of it. Capital is based on previous exploitation of workers and peasants. If you want to know where the first capital came from, it came from the exploitation of the feudal system of peasants and things related to that that got rolled over in slavery, exactly, got rolled over into capitalism, slavery, colonialism, and so on.
That's why we need to give credit to African Americans for building this country, really.
Yep.
Backbone of the economy.
To a great extent, yep. And in fact, slave money wasn't just related to the South, by the way. A place like Boston, old Boston money is wrapped up in the slave trade. Someone did a study on Bank of Boston. Harvard, exactly, yes. Harvard started in the 1630s. Slave up and running. The capital that they claim private ownership over was in turn developed, created through socialized production and the same exploitation, the same unfairness of not giving the full value of the money to the people that actually do the work existed. And it could have been worse than that. They could have inherited it too. Or maybe they got a bank loan. But how do you get bank loans? You got to be rich to get a bank loan for them that size, of a decent size. And so you're putting up collateral of stock share or not even doing that. You're part of that network of the elite, top 1% or less, where you own enough stuff that a bank will risk money giving you millions of dollars to expand production, like in Gates's case or whatever, to make personal computers and program
them. Then you gotta ask yourself, where did the bank get that money in the first place? How did they even...
Same thing, yeah. The bank got it
seed
through...
How did they come to this point?
The bank got it through exploiting, through the exploitation of labor and nature, the unfairness I just talked about, and then that money ended up in the bank, but that still comes from that same source. You know what I mean? Like, just if someone put it, parked it in a bank, and then the bank charged a fee or interest, it's still coming from the same source. It's further down the line of exploitation. Doesn't make it any cleaner. It's worse even, because it's further away from the productive process, you know? And that's what getting back to that point about corporations and what they, if they save money on taxes, does that mean they're going to invest in jobs, as Trumpo would say in his ignorant way? Does that mean they're going to give people raises? Absolutely not. And they even had a bunch of corporate executives in front of a Senate hearing or meeting or something, and the senator, I think it was a senator, it might have been a Congress, House Reps person, said, so are you all going to, if you got this tax break, would you reinvest it in higher wages for the workers, say, or expanding?
Was he a Republican senator?
I don't know. And they said, well, they wait to hear the answer. The answer was they said no. They were honest. And the vast majority, maybe all of them, said no. there's that we would increase our cash on hand, our assets. We would use it for acquisitions of other corporations, mergers and acquisitions. That what they didn't say, we would give it back. Well, the biggest thing they said was they would give it to the shareholders. Now, that's interesting. So people hear the word shareholders, and they're taught in a very superficial way, like maybe in high school or something, they're taught in the society that shareholders means that corporations somehow run collectively. The actually opposite is true. Corporations are completely authoritarian. The people at the top, the very narrow number at the top can be 1, 2, 12, 14, whatever. The corporate board, they do not... they are not beholden to the shareholders in the sense of waiting with bated breath, waiting, really wondering how the vote's going to go. They control enough stock, either a majority or a block of stock, that will give them decision-making power. That's what makes them the corporate board. You know what I mean? And stocks are only issued in publicly traded corporations. There's plenty of private corporations that don't issue stock. And they don't have stockholders except for a tiny number. I don't even sure if you call that stock. When a tiny number of privately held business evil people control a big corporation. They control portions of it, obviously, or they own it outright in one individual or two individuals or something. I'm not sure if they break that down to stock privately. I'd have to check on that. But what we really think of as stock is publicly held corporations issuing stock to really raise more money, to make more money. And they promise back a profit to the shareholders. But they make sure they control enough of that stock to control the corporation. And if someone comes in and tries to buy a big chunk of stock, that's called an acquisition. If it's against what the shareholder, the majority shareholders want, or the controlling shareholders want. So the so-called like shareholder democracy is a complete myth. And a lot of economists don't even push that too far, even bourgeois economists, but some do. And they teach people that somehow, like you hear in high school, oh, well, the shareholders decide everything. No, they don't. On paper, they have shareholder meetings once in a while, and they can take a vote. But the vote is controlled by shares of stock, and the corporate board makes sure they own enough shares of stock to control big votes and stuff like that.
That's like the things they were spewing at us at Whole Foods when I started working.
Exactly. Look what happened to Whole
Foods.
Yeah.
You're the shareholders, all of us.
Go to a meeting and take a vote.
We actually get to vote on things?
No,
you
don't.
Never once did they have taken us aside and said, okay, here's the issue. Vote on it.
Right.
Nothing.
No. And they might not.
Am I a shareholder? No.
Well, you're a shareholder. They can create rules within the corporation that say you need X number of shares to vote and so on. It's just a complete opposite of what the words they're using to describe what they're doing. by the way, one last thing from this Ginger Jensen letter post-election was that in the Northeast ward, she goes, the Northeast ward voted socialist. Hundreds of students voted in a local election for the first time, the University of Minnesota. Polls show a majority of young people support socialism over our current system of capitalism, which relies on massive inequalities and massive handouts to the rich, like the U.S. Bank Stadium, for example, while our communities face dwindling public education and a crisis of affordability. And then there's an appeal to go to that meeting I mentioned about launching a rent control campaign in Minneapolis, which I don't know if that's been officially launched or not, or that was sort of like a reconnaissance more to see post election, if there's enough, what the mood is, if people are still interested in it, and hopefully they were. I heard the meeting went well. I just don't have the latest details of a campaign. So I want to throw a little, is that okay? I throw a little music on. Actually, yeah. What I'm going to throw on, according to this thing you're about to hear, and I didn't listen to this before the show, but you're supposed to hear the words of Fred Hampton, a famous Black Panther activist who was murdered by the Chicago cops.
That's the one he goes, I am a revolutionary.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then after that, dead prez, we need a revolution. Now, you're supposed to be hearing these two things, but we'll see. We'll see. This is not sure it's going to work. Okay. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, and we'll be back after some music and talk.
We always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletariat. I am the people. I'm not the big. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the big. The people are going to have to stand up against the big. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
What I gotta do? Kidnap a lyric, take a melody, make it relevant. Hold a harmony hostage to these people, army verses. Stash the arms in the churches, bombs in the purses. Just when you think it's calm on the surface, we bomb on the first. I can talk, get nervous every verse. Revolutionary curse words. First come, first serve. It ain't no lost love. Freedom costs blood. That's word to the moss bird, nigga.
We need a revolution. We need a revolution. System ain't gonna change.
Wanna know, come follow me now. Diabetes and sickle cell, even mad cow. Wanna know how I can stop these cops from killing. I can feed these hungry children. I can stop racism, a product of capitalism. I can unpack the prisons and turn religion back to we living. I can stop the bloods from pillin', caps and the crypt from pillin'. Back, get your cousin off crack. I can stop the war, get gas in the black hood. Send the money right back to the pole for showing. If you with me, nigga, let me know. Let's go if you really wanna know.
RBG's off in this thing, they hip to the game, get it off the chain.
The system ain't gon' change unless you make it change.
You are now listening to WRBG, the People's Radio. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
Special offer, guaranteed personality. I'm all lost.
That was The Clash with All Lost in the Supermarket. And before that, Dead Prez with, what was the Dead Prez song?
It was Introduction by Fred
what
Hampton.
What did I do with that, man? No, Fred Hampton was separate, but I threw them in together in terms of credit. Yeah, we had Fred Hampton, Words of Fred Hampton, Being a Revolutionary, and then we had Dead Prez, We Need a Revolution. And we should play a lot more Dead Prez. I don't know why we don't.
Bring in the CDs.
Can't do that. We did that in the past. We played some hip hop in the past. Got away from it. I need to bring it back. And you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform commercial free community based radio. And we're a little slice of that community based talk and music from a working class Democratic Socialist perspective. Now, this is a little thing that this isn't that serious, not that important, but we have.
Criticisms that just stupid and kind of nasty in a way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a conservative magazine.
No, here and there's like.
Yeah.
At least have a base.
Yeah.
I'm a conservative. I hate socialism. This is why. Blah 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 blah. And that's it. Okay, I take that.
Yeah. This is what Diego's referring to is a magazine that, you know, if you're paying attention to this sort of thing, you've heard of, called the National Review. It's a conservative right-wing magazine that's been around since the 60s, I guess. Used to have William Buckley as the head of it, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I haven't even thought about this thing for a long time. And all of a sudden, I get a Facebook page and about some members of Social Alternative saying, oh, by the way, National Review's attacking us. And one member of Social Alternative, George, out in Madison, summed it up really well. He goes, it's an ultra-left attack from a right-wing source. And it is. That's exactly what it is. It's very strange and very funny if you're into political humor or hardcore political humor, I guess we'd call it. You know, I used to play this song, by the way, a little digression.
By reading this, I can actually come up with a political cartoon.
I used to play this Paper Planes song until someone got so sick of it they threatened me, but I don't respond well to threats, so we're just going to put it back on for later. MIA, Paper Planes, Homeland Security remix. I love that. Anyway, back to National Review. So somebody named Philip H. DeVoe wrote this, and I think, as I said earlier on the show, someone looked him up, and yeah, he's a 1%er, all right, prep school guy and all that. So he starts off saying, this is from December 6th, National Review, socialism by any other name. Those who claim the mantle seem to be ideologically confused. Now, I like being lectured by people that don't know anything about socialism, but pretend to be, because National Review has pretension to sort of intellectual discourse. And it's actually kind of really simplistic drivel. But anyway, so quote, Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawat, why don't you believe she's a socialist? Even though council members are nonpartisan. Okay, let's start right there. Nonpartisan is this term that the right and the liberals use, actually, to hide party affiliations. And it originally came out so people could not punish the incumbent party. They could punish the incumbent, but not the party. So, for example, when in the Depression, when people were voting for Roosevelt many times, it turned into just them voting Democratic Party, a lot of people. And the Republicans hated that. The Democrats hated that in their own way, which we'll get into in a second. later. But anyway, so they had this, the idea of nonpartisan elections came up, that you can't put your party label next to your name when you run for certain elections. And you want to fool, basically, the Democrats.